When I served as a chaplain at Serenity Lane several years ago, one of the lectures I heard was on an intriguing psychological concept known as Johari's window. Anybody heard of that? No? Okay, well, I got some help for you. I've got some handouts I mentioned that has a diagram that, since a picture is worth a thousand words, I can cut my sermon shorter. So I'm going to pass these out. I have 28 of them. I think that'll be enough for everybody that wants one. I would have handed them out during announcements, but nobody pays attention when things are handing out, because they always want to be sure they don't miss out on getting one. But it's a technique that helps people better understand their relationship with themselves and others. It's created by a couple of psychologists, Joseph Luft and Harrington Ingham, in 1955. So they gave it the name Johari because it's a combination of their first names, Joe and Harrington. So it's called Johari's window. The term window likely was chosen as a metaphoric meaning indicating one can look through to see what's inside. That's what you do with windows, right? You look in through a window to see what's inside the house, since we can't yet see through walls. So you have to look through a window. Well, the question is, what does that have to do with you and me? I'll mention to you, first of all, and I'll think you'll understand later, I got the idea to give this sermon as a result of, it seemed like there have been an unusual number of celebration of life services and memorial services here recently. And that's what triggered the thought of this sermon. You might wonder, so what's that have to do with it? Well, I think you'll figure that out as we go along, but if not, if I think of it, I'll mention the connection. So the subject of today's sermon, the title, I guess we could say, is Johari's Window and You. Johari is spelled J-O-H-A-R-I. I don't know if there's anybody with that first name, but this is two names combined together. Johari's Window and You, or I could say us, because it includes me as well. Well, obviously, anything that can help us better understand ourselves and others can be very helpful in the Christian life, and especially as we approach the Passover season, when we're commanded to examine ourselves to prepare for the Passover. Concept is really quite simple, I think, if you take a look at it. It shows a window with four panes on it, and you can look this up online. There's a lot of different explanations, and they're not all the same, but this is one of the ones that you find, kind of one of the more simple ones. But you've got four categories, four panes in a window: the known self, the blind self, the hidden self, the unknown self. This side are things about you that it says that you know. This other side are things that others don't know. Okay, it has those in common. And you can see that in the print down below here, it explains each of them. You got four different possibilities here in terms of knowing versus not knowing yourself, and other people knowing versus not knowing you. So that's the way that comes out. Now, I will mention something right off the top here. Kind of a thought question for you to think about as we go through the sermon. There's something, I think, wrong in this formula from our perspective, from a biblical perspective. So give us some thought as we go through and see if you can come up with how we need to change that to make it more scripturally accurate. I mean, the concept is good, okay, but there's something about it. In fact, it's one word in there that is misleading. If you know it already, don't say anything or you'll spoil my sermon. Well, we'll get to that. Actually, this was is something that's done in group therapy sometimes. They use 56 different adjectives that they read off or that they hand out to people, and they ask you to rate yourself and rate some other person based upon all these adjectives. And these adjectives are basically personality traits. So that's not something that we care that much about as far as the Christian life is concerned. You know, things like quiet versus outgoing or helpful versus something else, or happy versus something else. I could read them all off, but it's not something that we really need to focus on, because our focus would be more spiritual as opposed to whatever the focus is or the way they use it in the sessions where the exercise is used. Instead, we're going to go directly to the scriptures so we can test the accuracy and application of Jehari's window to our personal lives. Let's look first of all at a famous scripture in 1 Samuel 16 and verse 7. This is when Samuel was being replaced and his successor, David, was chosen. Very familiar passage. I'm sure we've heard it many times in sermons before, probably will many times again. Very important truism. It's kind of like the one that you can't judge a book by its cover. I thought about the other day, but you know, everybody does. Everybody does judge a book by its cover. You don't know what's inside the book necessarily. So people that publish books, or especially magazines, want to be sure they put back on the outside of the cover what's inside there, because people are too lazy a lot of times to thumb through and see what's in there. So they're going to look at it and say, if they don't see anything in the cover, then, yeah, well, I don't need to bother with that. Anyway, that's sort of a similar situation to what it says here in 1 Samuel 16, 7. The Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, or you might say the cover, but the Lord looks at the heart. The New Living puts it this way, the Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So in terms of Jehari's window, a window, of course, is something that's on a house. We got them in here. They don't have four panes, only got two per window, but this one shows four. So in terms of that metaphor, most people not only don't look through the window, they don't even look at the window at all. They just look at the side of the house when it comes to judging people. They look at the outward appearance. That's what it is. The outward appearance is like just looking at the outside of the house instead of bothering to walk up to the window and look and see what's inside. So obviously, you're not going to have a lot of accuracy when you do that. You can't tell what's inside a house by looking at the outside of the house. You have to look through the window in order to see what's inside. And even then, you can't see necessarily the whole house. You just see, it's got a very open floor plan. So again, we're not talking about houses here. We're talking about an analogy that applies to us as God's people. So even if people do look through the window, they're not able to necessarily see through it clearly for whatever reason. There might be blinds there or curtains, or the window might be dirty, or there might be something in front of the window or whatever. So you can't see everything that's inside, even looking through a window. And that brings up another scripture in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 12. That's significant. In fact, it's even talking possibly about a window or a mirror. Some see it one way, some the other, but actually both are applicable. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12. I'm going to do something I don't usually do. Two scriptures in the sermon I'm actually going to read in the Old King James for a reason. That's one particular word that I like better there. 1 Corinthians 13:12, the King James says, "For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as I also am known." All right, so what that's telling us here, it says we look through a glass darkly, and that would be talking about a glass window. But you think of a glass window, and everybody thinks, oh, it's like that, right? Was that the way windows were back at that time in the New Testament era? No, they didn't have glass. I'll read you an interesting quote from Barclay's Daily Study Bible that explains what they did have. He said, "As things are, what we see are reflections in a mirror. The image presented in this statement would be even more vivid for the Corinthians than it is for us. Corinth was famous for its manufacture of mirrors, but the modern mirror as we know it with its perfect reflection did not emerge until the 13th century. The Corinthian mirror was made of highly polished metal and even at its best gave but an imperfect reflection." It's been suggested that what this phrase means is that we see as through a window made with horn. That was the material used for making windows in those days, and all that could be seen through them was a dim and shadowy outline. So that kind of helps you understand better what this is saying, or the analogy, because we think, well, what's wrong? You see through a window darkly? Does that mean the lights aren't on? No, it just means that the material that was used is more like translucent rather than transparent. And even the mirrors were not accurately reflecting because they weren't made of glass either. So probably all of you, or maybe not all of you, but some of you have been to a fair or whatever where they have these trick mirrors where you can, some of them you look real fat, some you look real skinny. So if you're like me, I like the ones that make me look heavier. And most of you probably like the ones that make you look skinnier or taller or whatever. So those are distorted images. Well, if you look through something, it's a thin piece of horn, you can't see anything but just the outlines. And that, even that you couldn't see if the light weren't really good. So I guess if you want to say, so which one of these do we apply? Well, if you're talking about how we look at ourselves, how do you look at yourself? Through a window? No, in a mirror, right? Well, sometimes if it's dark outside and the light's on inside, it sort of acts like a mirror. But so that would be the application for looking at ourselves. When we're looking at others, it's like looking through a window. Because again, you don't want to look at people just for an outward appearance. You don't want to draw conclusions about someone based upon just the exterior. You want to be able to kind of see what makes that person tick, what they're really like inside. And that's pretty challenging. It's pretty difficult. And so what this verse is telling us is that, you know, we don't really get a true picture looking through a window or even looking in a mirror, as the mirrors and windows were back in those days. So the New Living Translation, I think, puts it even more clearly when it says, "Now we see things imperfectly as in a cloudy mirror, but then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I know now is partial and incomplete, but then I will know everything completely just as God now knows me completely." This says an awful lot here about what we're talking about in terms of Johari's window, and will help us to realize some of the defect, or that defect I'm talking about in the way that this is worded on your diagram. So it's telling us we don't know everything even about ourselves, right? Okay, so what this diagram is telling us that there are things we, in window one, things we know about ourselves that others know about us as well. Okay, so that's something that pretty well talks about being a very open, what you see is what you get person. So that would be window number one. Window number two are things that others know about us that we don't know, right? Because it's, and of course the opposite is you can see things in somebody else that they can't necessarily see. You can see things in me that I can't see. I've used that expression many times. If I have salad between my teeth, which I don't think I do because I haven't had lunch yet, but I'm the only one that doesn't know it because I don't see it. You can see it, I can't. So that's an indication of the second window. The third window is things we know about ourselves that others don't know. Okay, so that could be a situation where, what would be the reason for that? Well, maybe we feel lacking confidence, and so we feel like I have to put on a positive front so people will respect me. And I'll tell you something else, by the way, too. And that is sometimes, oftentimes, people who are looked upon as being conceited, you think, well, they think they're better than everybody else. You know, if they thought they were better than everybody else, they wouldn't have to put on this front. But people who come across that way a lot of times are putting it out there because they feel like I'm not adequate, so therefore I need to appear like I really can do this, that, and the other thing. So that would be an example of the third window, one of the applications of it. Of course, that's not an appropriate thing to do, to put on a front. And we don't have to, you know, because if what we are is not good enough for somebody, that's the best we can offer. You can't do any better than being yourself. Now, granted, at various faults and weaknesses we have, we want to try to steer around those and not, you know, rely too much on those, but you don't have to be phony. I especially someone who is like a pastor, I've learned from experience. In fact, I put that in my information when they asked me, you know, to write down lessons you've learned from the 50 years in the ministry. And it's one of the things I put down is I said I was told by somebody early on that where you need to put a distance between yourself and the people or they won't respect you. And I tried that, and I couldn't do it. So I thought, well, I'm just going to be myself. That's not good enough. Oh, well, you know. And I've been trying to do that ever since, to make just be myself. The thing of it is that if you put on a front that you're better than other people, you're not approachable. People already sometimes think, well, we ministers, we stand up behind a lectern, probably some, thing we stand on to be above everybody else. That's not a good idea. We used to meet in a school years ago that was up on, the lectern was up on stage, everybody else was down below, so I was looking down on people. That's not a good idea. I mean, obviously I wasn't looking down on only physically, but it doesn't give a very good image. I kind of like to be in the same level as everybody else, you know, because that's the way it is in life. Well, then there's the fourth window, which says things that neither we nor others know about us. Somebody else does. We'll get to that in a moment here as well, in case you don't know already. In 1 Corinthians 13, 12, we read that. It's telling us then that all that I know now, Paul says, is partial and incomplete at this point in time. But again, people will judge. That's one of the unfortunate aspects of human nature, is people tend to judge, look down on others, and because they're looking through one of these windows. But are they seeing what that person really is like totally? No. They just see a partial aspect, and therefore it's inaccurate. The Apostle Paul was judged by people in the Corinthian congregation. And notice what he says here in 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 3. Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. It fits right in with what we're talking about here. You can let it bother you if you think, well, people are thinking this, that, or the other thing about me. You don't have to. You don't have to. Remember something, most of you heard, some of you heard this, some of you haven't, but one of my dad's pieces of wisdom, he says, if they don't sign your paycheck, you don't have to worry about what people think about you. It's very true. It's very true. But people do let things like that bother them. Paul didn't. He says here, but with me, it's a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by a human court. He goes on to say, in fact, I don't even judge myself. He said, I don't even trust my own judgment about myself. There are things about all of us we don't understand about us, right? Some of those things other people can see and we can't see. Well, then there's some things that neither we nor other people see about us. But again, there's somebody who does see it, and we'll get to that in a moment as well. I'm wondering if Paul didn't have this in mind when he wrote Romans 14, some of the verses over there. But his point here in 1 Corinthians 4, he says he doesn't even trust his own understanding of himself, much less trusting somebody else's opinion about him. Because they only see a certain aspect about him. And it's partial, and therefore it's incomplete, and therefore inaccurate. So in Romans 14, I'm going to read verses 10 through 13. Kind of puts that into a different perspective, these verses that we read, when you realize this very important truth. I think we all know that, but sometimes we act as if we don't. We feel like, well, we really know what this person is like. I won't recommend this, but if you were to ask 10 different people to describe someone, how many different descriptions do you think you'd get? Probably 10. Everybody has different perspective on people, depending upon what they know or what they think they know about the person, what they see in the person, what time and what period of their life that they knew that person. Okay, so Romans 10, 14, starting verse 10, but why do you judge your brother, Paul writes, or why do you show contempt for your brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. For it's written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then each of us shall give account of himself to God. Therefore, let us judge one another, not judge one another any more, but rather resolve this, not to put a stumbling block or a cause to fall in our brother's way. So who does know everything about us? Not a trick question. God. God knows everything about us. Only God knows everything about us. He's able to look through the window. In fact, he can look through the wall. He doesn't even need a window, right? He's a spirit being. He doesn't need to look through a window the way we do. He's not limited. Psalm 139 is an incredible psalm that tells how thoroughly God knows us. Psalm 139, verses 11 and 12. I think sometimes maybe we forget that. I think that's why in the model prayer it says you start out by hallowing God's name. To realize you're not talking about a prejudiced human being. You're not talking to a prejudiced human being or someone who doesn't know everything about us, because he does know everything about us. I'm going to read this in the New Living. It says, O Lord, you have examined my heart and know everything about me. Verse 2, you know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and when I rest at home. You know everything I do. You know what I'm going to say even before I say it, Lord. You go before me and follow me. And Jesus reflected that in his earthly ministry. How many times was he encountering one of the religious leaders and he nailed them for thinking about something before they even said it? They said, how did you know that I was going to say that? Well, he had that quality of God to be able to do that. Well, one way this is applicable is the fact we're to examine ourselves prior to Passover. 1 Corinthians 11, we can read it there, verses 23 through 28. I'm going to use your New Revised Standard for this particular one. 1 Corinthians 11, starting verse 23, Paul says, For I received from the Lord what I also handed on to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night which he was betrayed, took a loaf of bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and said, This is my body that's for you, or broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. The same way he took the cup also after supper, saying, This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread, drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. In verse 27, then whoever therefore eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be answerable for the body and blood of the Lord. And verse 28, examine yourselves and only then eat of the bread and drink of the cup. The word examine in the Greek is diakrino, which krino means to judge, dia means thorough, judge yourself thoroughly. One of the lexicons defines this to make a judgment on the basis of careful and detailed information. Okay, so how do we do that when we don't understand everything about us? How do you do a thorough investigation? Well, what do you think? Go to the person who does know everything about us and say, you know, I need some help here. Please show me some things I need to see, because you see everything about me. I don't. Just be careful what you ask for. We joke about that, but seriously, it's true. We need God's help to be able to make a proper examination of ourselves. Something Mr. Armstrong used to say, I remember so many of those one-liners. He said, people want to be thought of as being good, but they don't want to do what they need to do in order to be good. So very true. So people will, a lot of times, will say, well, yeah, I just want to please God. Oh, yeah, I put God first. But then where the rubber meets the road, it doesn't work out that way. Even Paul said that in Romans 7. You know, he said that the things I make up my mind to do, I end up not doing. The things I think, I'm not going to do this, I end up doing it. Oh, wretched man that I am, he said. Who will deliver me of his body of death? And, of course, the answer is we need the forgiveness made available through Jesus Christ and his sacrifice, because we do fall short. And we can put on a front and act as if everything's hunky-dory. But, you know, we say that window out there, just pull the shades down, right? Pull the shades down. People won't be able to see what's inside of you. Does that work with God? Nope. He can see through a wall, much less or much more through shades. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here. But Psalm 90 in verse 8, God knows everything about us, good, bad, and indifferent. Now, whether it's a metaphor or whether God actually does this, I don't know. But it says here in this passage, Psalm 90 and verse 8, you have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. New Living says you spread out our sins before you, our secret sins, and you see them all. Now, does he literally do that? I don't know. That's what it says. Maybe it's a metaphor. But I'm reminded of when American Idol was on. Of course, it's back on again. They supposedly ended it, and they decided, oh, it's too good. We've got to bring it back. But they, in the final program or so, you could see them, or I guess some of the other in the series as well, that they would take pictures of these contestants and lay them out on the table and discuss them. So does God do that with our sins? That's what it says. Well, if we were playing a card game with God and see who had the most cards on the table, who do you suppose would win? We can put our cards. We talk about want to put all the cards on the table. We can't do that. We don't even know what all the cards are. God does. He spreads them out. And why he does it, I don't know. But that's what it says. Psalm 19, verse 12, asks a rhetorical question here. How can I know all the sins lurking in my heart, says New Living? Cleanse me from these hidden faults. That's, yeah, if we're supposed to, which we are, supposed to examine ourselves prior to Passover, we have to ask God to help us. Because there are things that are hidden, guess what? Where do you suppose that is? Well, that's a hidden self, hidden from other people, but it would be for us, which one would it be? The passage of Psalm 19, verse 12. Which one of these windows represents that? I know you're not familiar with it. Number two, blind self. Things others know about us that we don't know. That's it, hidden to us. In this case, God knows everything about us, things that we don't know about ourselves. So we have a blind self. All right, so once again, we need God's help to be able to do this. Now, does anybody think that you found a problem in this definition, in these definitions here? There are probably more than one problem, so don't feel bad if you don't have the same one I do. One word. What is it?
God.
Well, God's left out, yeah. But I mean the words themselves. What have we seen all the way through here about being able to understand ourselves and other people? Not very good at it, right? So there's one. This word is in every one of these windows. And we need to at least add a word. I think I heard the right answer. No, yes. Things we know about ourselves. What's wrong with that? Our perspective is skewed. We think we're this way. We think we're great people, and maybe we're not so great. Or things that other people know about us. How could we change that to make it more accurate? We could put in one word. Put a carrot in there. Should? Okay, that would be one. But realistically speaking, people... What?
Perceive.
That's a good one. Yeah. Perceive or things we think we know or the way we see ourselves, which isn't... But the word know, that's too strong. It's not accurate. Now, I could have corrected it, but I thought, no, I'm just leave it in here because... Give you a chance to kind of do some thinking about it. So, but one of these doesn't need to be changed. Which one do you suppose that would be? Even though the word no is in there. Four, yeah. Things neither we nor others know about us. That's a true statement. There are things about all of us that we don't know, nobody else does either. Of course, except God. So I think you can see this is a pretty valid concept here that we can use to preparing for Passover and also throughout the year when we're thinking about other people. You need to keep in mind, we have our perceptions, to use your word there, noun form, about people. And those perceptions are based upon our outward observation. We don't have the ability to look through and see inside of a person. God does. We look in the outward appearance because that's all we can do. Now, sometimes you can tell by things like body language or different things like that, but even that can be deceiving. I haven't told this one in quite a while, but years ago, back in the 60s, when I was at Ambassador College in Pasadena, there was a guy that worked on I forget which department out there. Big, tall guy like me, sat right in the front row in church. And he always had this scowl on his face during the service. And Mr. Ted Armstrong picked up on that. And one day he walked up to him, and I don't know what he said to him, but it probably wasn't real positive. And come to find out, this is the way this guy concentrated. It looked like he was angry, turned off. And actually, he was tuned in. Well, then there was Dr. Hay, who would go like this in the front row. And you figure, oh, he's snoozing. But you go up and ask him what the sermon is about, he could tell you. So looks are deceiving. Only God can look on the heart and know what really makes us tick. The outward appearance is not nearly as important as what's inside. That's why Mr. Armstrong was so many times asked when people would say, well, can I do this on the Sabbath? Can I do this or that, whatever? His first question he always asked, who remembers that? Anybody? Why are you doing it? Now, some things, it's like, you know, if you're robbing a store, you don't just ask, why are you doing it? But there are reasons why we do things, because God looks in the heart. That's what God's concerned about, is why are you doing this? It's more important to do things in faith with a right heart than it is to be accurate. Now, it's nice when you can have both of them together. But a person can be accurate in what they're doing and yet doing it with one arm twisted behind their back. That's not good enough. There's stories about that you can think of, too. In fact, I think there's one in the autobiography. I forget how that went now, if anybody remembers that. But he asked his daughter, Beverly, not to do something. And anybody remember how that was? I forget now. But anyway, she kind of did what she was told to do, but she did it in a way that was not really what was intended. So a lot of different possibilities. And it's, I mean, you think about this, there's just so many different applications. I was mentioning earlier in window three there that things we know about ourselves that others don't know. Oh, there's a scripture I didn't read here. Come think of it, I believe. If I can find it, unless it disappeared out of my notes here. Oh, yeah. Let's go back to Psalm 139. I was talking about the fact we can pull down the shades where people can't see in. In fact, we just got a new set of blinds because we have this narrow window right next to our front door. You can see all the way down the hallway. So we got some blinds that, for the sake of privacy, you know, close the blinds so people can't look inside the house. Does that work with God? Well, verses 11 and 12. David says, I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to come night. But even in darkness, I cannot hide from you, he said. To you, the night shines as bright as day. Darkness and light are the same to you. So obviously, we can't hide from God. And nobody's going to be able to manipulate their way into the kingdom or pull the shades over God's eyes. We can do that with other people. It happens all the time where people put on a false image. But there's some things that just are too personal. I'm not saying we have to be totally open. And one of the objections I have about Alcoholics Anonymous and experience I had when I was a chaplain surrendering is people are too open. Sometimes they'll share things that they really shouldn't. They're too personal, you know, in their marriage or whatever. But you can't, it's old saying, you can run, but you can't hide in terms of relationship with God. Now, getting back how did this idea come to me from the standpoint of celebration of life services? Well, the thing is that in the celebration of life, there are people who knew the individual at a time or in circumstances that other people didn't know. We had the service for my daughter Kathy here this past Sunday. And us family members thought, I never knew that Kathy. I never knew that about her. I mean, that's pretty humbling to realize you can find out things about someone in your own family you didn't know because other people have known that person at other times in their life, in other circumstances of life, in different areas of the country or whatever the saying may be. And so I don't know what word to use because I don't want to talk about a celebration of life being something that I like because I don't. It's a bittersweet time. But one of the positive aspects of it is I learn things about those people I never would have known. Just about every service I've ever been involved with, I thought, wow, look at that. I remember a line from the famous movie, about when you build it, he will come. When the guy his name was Kinsella, by the way. I thought that was interesting. I was talking to Carl about the subject of the movie. We're talking about sermons, I was saying how that the most sermons you tend to remember the most are the ones that with a story. And I mentioned that the one I've given is without a doubt the ones that people remember the most is based upon that movie. And I said, did you happen to see that? Well, that was a dumb question. He said, well, yeah, the guy's name was Kinsella. Of course I saw it. So anyway, that scene toward the end where his father came out, and one of the lines that Kinsella said, the younger one, look at that man. He said, he has his whole life ahead of him. I wasn't even a thought in his mind at that time. He's a ball player and everything. I guess there's another thing that's interesting, too, in the resurrection. You see people and think, wow, I never knew that person. Because we all have limitations in time and space and an ability to see inside of a person. And that's what Joe Harry's window is telling us about, is we think we know things about ourselves. We think we know things about other people. We really don't. So two overall conclusions, I think. There may be more than that. One is, we can learn from this, is we all need to ask God to help us understand ourselves better, especially in our self-examination as we prepare for Passover. We also need to refrain from passing judgment on others because what we think we know about them is not accurate or complete. And we also need to remember that only God understands us completely and perfectly. And we all know that, but somehow we don't necessarily make the connection when we start judging other people. We do need to remember that. And maybe just thinking of this Joe Harry's window will kind of help us remember that. So I'm going to say we can change the wording, and this is one way to do it. You can write in whatever you wish if you want to. The known self, window number one, are things we think we know about ourselves that others think they know about us. You just put a little carrot in there and put the above the line. Second window, the hidden self, things we think we know about ourselves that others don't know. Maybe they don't know because what we're thinking is not accurate, so they wouldn't come to that conclusion. The blind self, things others think they know about us that we don't see in ourselves. The unknown self, that's okay, things neither we nor others know about us. Well, isn't it great that people can't see in through the window? Don't you like to have privacy in your house where people can't see inside everything you're doing? That's why we have blinds. That's why we have curtains. That's why we have doors. Aren't you glad, though, by the same token, that people can't see what's inside of you? I wouldn't want to be a minister, I'll tell you, because I wouldn't want you to see what's inside of me, and I'd get pretty discouraged if I looked inside of all of you. So God has mercifully allowed us to be limited in what we can see about ourselves so that we rely more on him and think, oh, I know everything. I don't need God. I know everything about myself. We don't. And he also does not allow us to see with inside of other people because it's none of our business. As Romans 14 says, we all have to give account of ourselves, nobody else. So I think, again, this is a very timely subject before Passover, but really it's timely any time of the year. And the fact that God is the only one that understands us completely and perfectly, I think we can say, thank God for that. Thank God for that. I remember first year I was at Ambassador College. I used to be so self-conscious around ministry, especially GTA, because I thought that guy is so smart. I felt like I was going in there in an x-ray machine or something. He's looking right through me, and I was nervous and self-conscious. I found out something about that too, being self-conscious is actually thinking too much about yourself. People tend to think it's a negative self-image. No, it's just thinking too much about ourselves. There's a cartoon, I've mentioned this a few times before too, Ziggy cartoon. I don't know how many of you have ever seen Ziggy cartoons. They're not in the paper here. But anyway, Ziggy was lying in a psychiatrist's couch. And a psychiatrist says, Ziggy, so what's your problem? He says, the whole world hates me. He said, Ziggy, most people don't give a about you. So for people to think, if you walk in a room, everybody's going to look at you. Wow. Is that being self-preoccupied or what? Why'd everybody be looking at you? Unless you forgot to put your pants on or something, or something unusual, or if you got something that attracts people's attention. But just walking into a room, and why would anybody, when you think about it rationally, why would anybody feel like they need to be better than what they are as a person? One of the people, what I mentioned earlier, that people who are confident and who have ability don't have to flaunt it. Chet Atkins, you probably all know who he was if you've never heard him play. I have a number of occasions. One of the best guitar players ever lived. He didn't have to put on a show. In fact, he would get up there and say, I learned this song off a movie I watched the other night. You think, wow. Why would anybody say that? You want to think, I've studied this, blah, 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 make it bigger than what it is or better than what it is. And if his guitar was out of tune, he'd tell you. So what? Everybody's guitar goes out of tune. It really kind of endears you to people if they think, boy, that person is human. This person makes mistakes like I do. I'm comfortable with that. You don't flaunt things about yourself. You don't try to put the scriptures about that too. Don't cherish an exaggerated version of yourself. Some translations say, don't think of yourself better than what you actually are. It all comes back to Joe Harry's window. Very, very important lesson. So in closing, one final scripture is very good advice about judging people other than what it says in Romans 14. Don't do it. This one would be added to it. It's 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 5. I read this in a New Living Translation. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 5. Kind of a summary statement from what we learn from Joe Harry's window. Paul writes, so don't make judgments about anyone ahead of time, before the Lord returns. For he will bring our darkest secrets to light and will reveal our private motives. That doesn't sound like fun, does it? We're going to be able to appear before God and Jesus Christ, and they're going to tell us what really made us tick. Then God will give each one whatever praise is due. We've all had, probably at one time or another, evaluations. And the job, at school or whatever, and sometimes those evaluations are not accurate, not thorough. This one will be very thorough, but it will also be totally accurate. And after it's all done, God will say, but you're forgiven. Get a clean slate. So none of us has the ability to sit somebody down and say, let me tell you what's wrong with you. Let me fix you. It's not our job to do. That's God's job. That's Christ's job. In fact, God has delegated to Jesus Christ the responsibility of judging, because it says he's the Son of Man. In other words, he lived a physical life. He can identify with us in a way that God the Father doesn't, because God the Father has not lived a life in the flesh. Jesus has. And so God in his mercy has delegated that responsibility to him and him only, not to any one of us. I used to say in one of the sermons I gave in the past, so don't come in with your robe on and say, I'll rise. You know, you're not the judge. There's only one. We all know who that is. We're not capable of it. It's not our responsibility. And we can't even, like Paul said, we can't even accurately judge ourselves. We need God's help to do that. But I don't think God's going to help you to judge somebody else because it's not your place to do that. That's in Romans 14 also. Who are you to judge another man's servant? We're fellow servants. None of us is over somebody else in that regard. Even we as pastors and elders, we're just part of all of you. We're fellow servants. Paul never flaunted his authority. He just said, we're fellow servants. We're helpers of your joy. And one of the ways to be helpers of your joy is to make this realization that, hey, the best way any of us can do is to be ourselves and ask God's help to be a better self, God and Christ working in us, which is the next holy day after the one that's coming up, day of Pentecost, where Christ lives in us, Father lives in us through his Spirit, to make those internal changes. And the time will come when it says that God will give each one whatever praise is due.